Welcome, friends. This is Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. We are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. You can reach us worldwide through our website, redicecreations.com. We have a news Twitter feed, two YouTube channels, and our RSS news and radio podcast feeds as well. It's all available for you on our website, so you can follow us at your convenience. You are listening to our first hour. That's always free on our website. You can also sign up for a membership and enjoy our full program and archives for only 16 euro cents per day. And I hope you're comfortable wherever you are, in front of your computer, maybe on your couch, or maybe taking a walk with your iPod or MP3 player outside. We are into September 2009, and we up here in the Northern Hemisphere, at least, are getting closer to autumn. And we have the 999 date coming up soon as well. We'll see if that brings any kind of symbolic events or anything like that. In any regard, I'm glad that you joined us today. We are going to talk about legends of the Hollow Earth, the subterranean world, Shambhala, the reptilian connection, and much more with our guest, Kathleen McLean. She's the author of the book Too Many Secrets, Humanity's Fight to Expose the Secret Underground Worlds. And her website is toomanysecrets.synthasite.com. We'll have this linked up on redicecreations.com as well, so you can click through easily from there. And she's joining us all the way from Australia. And it's great to finally have someone with us from the Southern Hemisphere again on the program. So welcome to the program, Kathleen. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here today.
You know, Kathleen, I've heard stories, rather, about strange activities down in Australia when it comes to underground bases, military installations, and things like this. Maybe you can tell us here at the beginning a little bit about the situation down in Oz right now, and when it comes to underground bases, and when you first started looking into this subject.
Sure. Australia has really opened up to me ever since I started to research into underground bases and the Hollow Earth. I never realised how many hotspots, if you like, are actually in Australia. I really only was acquainted with Pine Gap, which I think a lot of people have heard about, and is certainly probably the granddaddy of underground bases, next to probably Dulles in New Mexico. Mm. But having a look into Australia, I found that there were probably about 10 more, and I was quite shocked. I found that there were a couple near where I lived, which is always not very nice. Mm. But the underground bases that I could reasonably get some information on seemed to go into a huge amount of different ways of manipulating humans, from abducting people to implanting them to sort of sending out, if you like, some sort of control thought process over the nearby population. It was quite disturbing, really. So that's what I came up with for Australia, but I mean, it was the same for the rest of the world, really, and including Sweden.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
yes.
I came up with three for Sweden, which I can talk about later if you like. But as for how I sort of got interested in this, it sort of was a very slow process. It was during my teenage years, you start to question everything, you know, about religion and God and government, and the Hollow Earth wasn't very well covered when, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, certainly.
And as I got into it, I realised, oh, people actually take this subject quite seriously. And I started to come across some books, and I read more and more. And as the internet came along, well, it just exploded. And I thought, oh, I could actually get some good information together. And it took about 7 years, and I put together my book, and I just learned so much that I just wanted to pass it on to people.
Yes. Hey, it's interesting that you mentioned Sweden, by the way. Me and Fredrik did a tour around some of the old kind of defunct military inside mountains, military kind of installations or military, well, they are underground bases, really. Very, very common. You can see them when you drive by roads here and there. And we took a tour on few of these around the west coast here in Sweden, and there's a lot of those actually around here. And these were like back from the 50s, 60s, maybe some from the 40s, I don't know. But the main thing that occurred to me when we walked around these kind of defunct bases was that, you know, I wonder where the military are hiding out now, because these are, some of them have been turned into kind of server halls, facilities for web servers and things like this. Some of them are not used at all, otherwise they're converting them over. But a thought that occurred to me was that the military must be having a new set of bases, even deeper underground or something like that. What do you think about that? Do you think that's the case, that the military has left these for other kind of better or bigger facilities?
They're certainly bigger, and the sort of the what I call is the key to building these machines. These underground bases was the tunnel boring machine, which allowed so much deeper digging and getting out of all the rock and so forth. They now use those as we use cars. Yes, they are much deeper, and they're much bigger, and they're much more sophisticated. And the reason for that really came across only years ago, when we started to realise how insecure and how concerned the secret government was about 2012, and how they took it so seriously that serious climactic environmental problems were going to come about in 2012, and they were just going down so deep, more deeper. These old underground bases that you've come across would be playgrounds really now.
Exactly.
Really, they're just like throwaway things now. They don't care about them anymore. They're going down seriously very, very deep into the earth, trying to protect themselves, because they really do believe that, I don't, but they believe that there is some serious damage that's going to be done to the earth in the next couple of years, and they want to survive, so they're going to bury themselves basically, and if they want to stay down there, good luck to them.
Well, exactly. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I share the same point of view in one way. I think it's it could be even a kind of, how should we call it, like a false flag operation. It could be all a big experiment to scare people into some kind of situation where they say that because of climatic changes, as you say, or something, incoming object, asteroids, blah blah blah, we have to go down into underground facilities in order to survive. But we would never have any way of confirming that. And so, do you think that they are building these because the governments and the black ops world, so to speak, believe that something will happen, or do you think that they actually will manifest something with exotic technology or something else, which means that they can, with earthquakes or climatic changes, bring this scenario about, so to speak? What's your take on that?
Exactly. When you say manufactured, I think that's a real possibility. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day, and they were really concerned that, you know, there's a whole awful scenario of the earth was going to be destroyed type of thing, we're all going to die, and they believe that. And I said, well, look, I don't believe it myself, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to try and manufacture earthquakes, floods, false flag operations, a couple of buildings falling down. We've seen it happen before. They'll certainly do it again, just to reinforce in people's mind that fear factor. And they do feed off the fear. And so if they have to do that to convince us that our lives are in danger, they will do it.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't want to be living in certain parts of the world right now.
Is there some red flags that goes up into certain regions or certain countries for you?
Would there be places that I wouldn't want to be?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Well, America always sticks out for me. America seems to be the real battleground. I've often tried to work out, is it because of their democratic system? Is it because they're so heavily armed, even the citizens? I mean, America is honeycombed underneath with old abandoned, old underground bases,
yes.
From many, 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 hundreds of years ago, from other species that have now gone deeper, not humans, but others. And that's another part of the whole. It's so complex. There's so many different races within the subterranean world, not even getting into the hollow earth. There's so many races living there, and you often wonder, I wonder what they're thinking about what we're doing on the surface, and what are they doing? And when we do, and when our military do go burying, burrowing down into the earth, have they ever come across them? Do they ever fight with them? It's so complex, you probably never find out about it. But these are the things that sort of occupy my mind.
Wow. Well, that's something that I definitely want to talk more about in regards to what actually takes place and if there's indeed other beings down there in that sense. But do you think that there is, collaboration going on, or do you think that or those bases that you've been looking into primarily, are those solely human-made, meaning that it's human beings who are trying to escape, or is this a co-joint operation with a off-world or subterranean species?
Well, there's definitely a certain faction of it's hard to, I mean, there's an argument even over what to call them. Are they extraterrestrials, or are they people who've been here longer than us? So even the name for us, for what we should call them, is in doubt. But let's say non-humans, there's definitely a collaboration there between, the elite of this world and, the non-human races. And yes, they are working together in the underground bases, and they're looking to survive themselves, and they don't really give a damn about us. But yes, they are. Unfortunately, there's very few benevolent underground bases that I could find out about. So most of them, is what I could find out about them, was that they're all networked and they're all talking to each other, but they're not really benevolent. So they're not really looking out for our welfare.
What about if we talk a little bit about some of the, you mentioned the drilling machines and so forth. People have reported humming, different noises, weird kind of almost like a vibration, feels like it's deep below under the earth. Do you think that this could be connected with some kind of drilling or some other kind of technique they use to bore out mountains or something like this?
Absolutely. I mean, what I came across in my research was that the tunnel boring machine, which was invented about 1950, is actually a design that they've taken from an older race that they actually came across, and they sort of saw these old tunnel boring machines. It's amazing. And it's like the reverse engineered technology that we get from UFOs. They've come across the tunnel boring machine and thought, oh, that looks pretty good. Let's build one of these. And they've been commercially available since 1950. So the drilling and the humming and the loud banging is exactly what they're doing. And I grew up in the Blue Mountains, which is just outside of Sydney, and it's completely honeycombed. There's an underground base up in the Blue Mountains, and everybody knows it. And as a child growing up, I could hear humming and all sorts of funny noises going down deep in the mountains. So I didn't realise as a child what that was, but now I definitely know. I actually did come across a very amazing story a couple of years ago about a woman and her children who were living in a house, and there was a basement in the house, and she could hear from time to time drilling and loud heavy banging and voices. And one day she knocked on the floor of her basement, and because she could hear voices talking to each other, and the voices stopped. So they could obviously hear her knocking. When she went to her local sort of government department and said, look, what are you doing under my house? They said, look, we're terribly sorry. There's absolutely no work going on that we're aware of. And then later, many years later, she finds out, well, there's possibly an underground base near me. So they have no, they really don't care if we can hear them or not. They're going to do whatever they want to do, and we can have our conversations, but they're going to keep going with their underground bases.
Well, that's right. They don't ask for permission from anybody. They just do it. That's their that's their spiel, so to speak. But how about some of the other kind of, I guess, eyewitnesses to this or testimonials? We have people like Phil Schneider, for instance, that talked about this. Yes. Have you looked into his work at all? And he died back in 96 or something like that, if I remember correctly.
Yes, and they tried to, well, officially it was a suicide, which is quite ridiculous, seeing he was tied up with a hose and had torture marks on his body. I mean, it's a sad story for Phil Schneider. Yes, he was ridiculed when he came out by his own sort of by his own industry of UFO, ology, and no one believed him. And so when he began to talk about all of his experience, people ridiculed him, and he eventually said, "Well, you're in on it. You've been infiltrated by the government," and he was absolutely right. MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, that's knowledge has been around for many years, that MUFON gets infiltrated by, secret government agents to find out what it is we're talking about. So poor Phil Schneider, and there was a couple of other people I spoke of who... they lose their family members, they disappear, and then they disappear. And they try to talk about, mostly they try to talk about Dulles in New Mexico, which is a horrible place, where this is the archetypal, underground base where, you see people in giant vats of liquid and, you see hybrids of humans and reptilians and, reptilians and greys are working alongside of each other and all this sort of thing. This is the base of where this all happens, and it's completely denied that Dulles even exists.
Yes.
And Pine Gap is apparently in Australia is a sister underground base to that. So unfortunately, we have that in Australia.
Yes. Do you think that these locations even could be connected in some way through the planet or at least maybe through the crust underground? Do you think that they could stretch so far? Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that was really contentious when I was looking into that. It was quite acceptable that there was it was more well known, I guess, that there's a vast underground sort of shuttle system in the United States. I can't quite remember his name, but he wrote Underground Bases and Tunnels.
That's Richard Sauder.
Richard Sauder, that's right. And that book was really fantastic because he actually sorted through real Navy and government documents and actually got the physical, evidence on their own letterhead that says, yes, we're going to build this shuttle system. And the only thing they didn't talk about was the actual trains that were going to use them. They spoke about everything else, but about the actual trains and who was going to use them.
Yeah.
I do believe it's absolutely possible because he, in his second book, he went into underwater bases and tunnels. So he was then going, finding proof of, bases far and into the ocean where there were underground bases built under the bed of the ocean. So of course there would be some sort of shuttle system connecting that to a mainland. I believe that absolutely. But to find evidence of it is very, very difficult. So
yes,
there could be shuttle systems that go within the country, and in Europe you're just using your common sense because the countries in Europe tend to be a lot smaller than, say, something as vast as the United States.
Yes.
But sometimes when you look at, say, a map of Europe, you've got underground bases and they're so close to each other. It's it's foolish to think that they would not be connected, even though they're part of a different country. Really, countries are they don't play any part in this world that we're talking about. That's just for sort of third dimension Earth, where we deal in time and these things don't matter. So you know, a base in France could easily connect to a base in sort of Germany and so forth, and they all become connected. So, but under the ocean, connecting, say, somewhere like, South America to Australia, it can't be proved, but I do believe it's absolutely possible.
Really interesting, and I think you're absolutely right there. I think the lines on a map, that's all there are for you know, for the people who are connected at the top, so to speak, and nations and countries doesn't matter to them in that sense. And I've also heard that you're talking about this some kind of very fast, I guess, as well, transportation system. I've heard stories about maglev trains. There's advanced technology being used in some of these underground bases, and which means that you can travel, for instance, very, very fast from one base to another base, and with the type of technology that we here on the surface doesn't, we don't get access to this type of technology. Have you heard something about that?
Maglev trains have been around for the, I mean, if you use the older days where what the military have had for 40 years, or what we are now getting in the public domain, the military have had for 40 years. So yes, they've had the maglev trains for 40 years or so, building their underground bases and connecting them. But during the period of my research, Japan released the fastest train in the world, and it was a maglev train.
Yes, that's
right. It was magnetic levitation, which is all maglev stands for, and it was reaching speeds of 300 miles per hour or more. And so there you go. You see something that's been sort of hidden, and people say, oh, that's impossible, and then it comes out into the commercial domain.
Yes.
And so people who, I often speak to people who find it really hard to understand how underground bases are possible, and so I say, well, look at the Channel Tunnel, or look at a shopping centre that's half of it's underground, or look at a seven-storey car park that's underground, or any sort of, in Sydney we have a tunnel which goes under, the harbour, that, goes for 5 minutes if you drive it. So people can't believe in an underground base, but they can readily accept all these things that are built underground. I said, well, how come you can accept these things, but you can't accept that there's an underground base? And even there are military bases that are publicly acknowledged, such as NORAD, on the East Coast, I believe, that's publicly acknowledged, that's way underground in the mountains.
Yes.
And people go, oh, yes, that's fine. And we have all these continuity of government emergency things for people, in the event of a nuclear war. And that's all fine, but no, an underground base and, aliens working together, sorry, that can't be possible. So it's sometimes I just have to point those things out and people go, oh, okay.
Well, that's right. I mean, Cheyenne Mountain is one of the official level, at least, one of the biggest, I think, underground bases. And I think you're right. I think NORAD has their offices there and so forth. And again, I think we put up on Red Ice a while back another story from, I think this time, Canada. There was this old nuclear, bunker, pretty much, where they had a detailed plans. This was back in the 50s or something like that as well, where there are detailed plans of what should be done and who should be shipped off to these underground facilities if something happened, if a nuke went off in the country or something like that. So it's well known and people know it exists, but the perception now, it seems to be a little bit like, yeah, but that was in the old days when things were bad in relation to the Cold War and all that stuff. What people don't realize is that it's still going on. It probably even more advanced today than it ever was,
That's exactly right. The technology has changed, but we've had these underground bases for so many years. And then also when they build these underground bases and they go down so far, they break through into these much older, old, much older underground bases that have been around for thousands of years that have long been deserted by the former race. And that's not us. It's a non-human race of beings who've long gone. Maybe they've gone deeper, maybe they've left, but they break through. Look at any mountain range and they'll be definitely honeycombed underneath. Speleologists, you may pronounce it that way. They know all about this. They go, investigating into tunnels and there's so little that is on the map. There's so many tunnel systems that have been discovered. There's so much to discover that I don't think we know. Anywhere 5%, I think we know what's on this earth, and the rest is just guesswork.
Andes Mountains, for instance, is one in South America that is, as you say, honeycombed with different tunnel systems and so forth. And there's parts and systems in Mexico. I know that the mountain range mm-hmm. between Spain and France, can't remember the name right now, but the same thing there. And the question is, maybe we can tie this together a little bit with the legends of the Hollow Earth, because I remember stories about where the Hopi Indians talk about a race of people who brought them down during a cataclysm, certain number of them, and they took them out again, so to speak, when it was safe on the earth again because of some kind of climatic change or cataclysm. So if we put it in that context, is this something that you've looked into as well in regards to the mythology around the Hollow Earth?
The mythology of Hollow Earth can sometimes be conflicting as well as sort of tying things together. There were a couple of sort of texts that I looked into. One of them was the Smoky God, which you may have heard of, about a young man who sort of journeyed into the Hollow Earth and with his son, and they spent 2 years inside the Hollow Earth. And I mean, it's an amazing text to read. That's sort of more of a northern European sort of text, but you can also look at other texts. There was one that came from America called I Remember Lemuria, and there was another text that came out called The Hollow Earth in the Puranas, which was written by an Indian scholar, and he looked at basically the text called, known as the Mahabharata,
yes,
which is four times the size of the Christian Bible. It's a huge, huge book, and it sort of details their sort of history of how they came to be where they are. But he sort of went over it again, and he reinterpreted the text and came up with these amazing stories of wars, highly technological wars, between advanced visiting extraterrestrials, people from the Hollow Earth, and they'd all get together and have a meeting. Just amazing. But unfortunately, we don't have anything really current for the Hollow Earth. It's all very old and it can be easily dismissed as folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've been doing for so long. They say, oh, yes, that's very nice, but it's just folklore. There's nothing current, and which is really unfortunate. The only current one is the text I Remember Lemuria, which is sort of very very negative. Looks into sort of race of beings who basically ate humans, which is very current now to fit in with the way we look at sort of extraterrestrials now, but or part of them. But another aspect of the Hollow Earth was the sort of legend of the giants.
Yes.
Which it became confusing sometimes, because you have some texts which would talk about sort of people their own size or our size now, and then you'd have other texts which would talk about giants. And the ancient American Indians would have stories about the giants, and the Smithsonian Institute has been famous in covering up these skeletons, which were only found at the end of, say, the 19th century, and they were transported to the Smithsonian Institute, which conveniently now have disappeared. But they would have giant skeletons they were finding in these funny, strange pyramid type of mounds across America, and 8 feet, 10 feet tall. But the ancient Indians were saying, well, these were the people who we used to be really good friends, we used to get along really well, but they came from the Hollow Earth. And there's so much folklore, and South America is really rich in that sort of folklore as well. They have sort of their tunnel network. They also have some sort of in their very impenetrable jungle in South America, they have where barely a human has stepped foot. Cave systems where apparently you can, if you know where to go, you can go down into the Hollow Earth and all this sort of thing. And it's quite amazing. The folklore is much more rich than what you can really find in sort of hard physical evidence. But it's good enough.
well, it is. I mean, I think the mythological record, so to speak, It tells us a story about those kinds of things that we can't kind of physically dig down into the earth and find anymore, because it's gone in one way or another. But again, what you're talking about here is potentially some of these sites have been found underground by the Black Ops people. Do you know if there's any testimonials to this? I mean, workers, for instance, that have been performing the work and then gone back to the surface and talked about it. I know there's one guy, I think he's a British guy, called James Casbolt. He had a little bit of media attention a while back. He was a former MI5 or MI6 agent, I think, and allegedly worked in some of the underground bases. Have you heard or looked into any of these kinds of testimonials or eyewitnesses to these events?
I haven't actually heard of that person you just mentioned. There are people who do talk about, some of them aren't living anymore. They've either died or they've been, gotten rid of. But there are some people who've spoken about underground bases or cities in places even like Antarctica. Antarctica is a very busy place if you look into it.
Yes.
There's a place apparently called Rainbow City. And that's, it's amazing to even describe as rainbow because of the colours, and just the people who've discovered the remnants of the civilizations, and they come back to sort of tell their story. But I think the problem with getting some of these stories out to people is the media. And
yes.
One of the last chapters of my book was looking exactly at how the media manipulate these stories, how they use them for their own benefit. There's a movie coming out soon called 2012, which is of course very doom and gloom.
Yes. Yes.
But the media block people from hearing about these stories. You just do not see it. And unfortunately, too many people believe that if it's not on the front page of the newspaper, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Which is really scary, because these people are going to have a hell of a time believing or coping with the information that's going to come out very soon about, what's going on the earth. So when you try and get information out to people about underground bases, it's very hard to get it out to them because, I have friends who are journalists, but they're unable to really run a huge, article on my book or, really get it out into the people. It's just, they're just not helping. The only sort of angle you're getting from the media is the doom and gloom, we're all going to die.
Yes.
So don't bother. Don't bother surviving. Just die. We're going to survive, but we're not going to help you to survive. So, there are people, I think there's a great deal of information out there that people know about these installations, because one of the things I say in my book is that, to build an underground base takes thousands of people.
Yes.
Whether you be, you're the truck taking away the dirt or you're installing a computer, there's thousands of people. who would have worked on these things, where are these people? Why aren't they talking? I mean, one of the reasons could be that they're probably heavily implanted, and they're probably, their memories are wiped. That could be one reason.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
You know, one thing that comes up here, which I'm reminded about, is, for instance, we have, you know, former dictators like Augusto Pinochet in Chile, for instance. Again, Chile is very close to Antarctica. Under his regime, thousands of men disappeared. There's again, testimonies from the women, the wives, and children as well, of how the men were basically dragged from their homes and taken somewhere and disappeared. And one theory that goes hand in hand with this, of course, is that he actually did some kind of expeditions down to Antarctica. They might have had some program there, meaning that they actually stole these men to perform some kind of underground work there, and something else happened to them. Either they were killed off or died in the work. Have you heard about this at all?
Abducting people is a huge industry because they need someone to do the work. The whole abduction of vast numbers of people, it happens to children, which was one area I looked into, which is terribly sad. But certainly people do get abducted. This is where, unfortunately, this is where, a lot of people do get returned. So when a missing person doesn't necessarily mean they've gone to these awful places.
Sure.
But, you know, there's thousands of people every year who are just, will never be found again because they're never meant to be found. And they do get used for all sorts of purposes, and one of them would be to be the slave to run whatever errand they want them to run. And in places like South America, which is sort of not very open to the world, mountains and jungle and all this sort of thing, and a very sort of closed society, and so close to Antarctica, very close. I mean, if you look at a map, they're so close. It's very easy to see how, yes, they could be taken to Antarctica. And, of course, they're not going to be returned. The stories of Hitler escaping to Antarctica and how he's possibly ended up in South America, I mean, that's a very old story. And, submarines making their way from Europe, just as Second World War was falling, submarines making their way to South America because they were so talented in building their technology. They were much further ahead than America and Russia and so forth.
Yes.
So absolutely, that's absolutely possible. One funny fact I came across in studying the Second World War. Germany and who got all the sort of, you know, spoils of Germany.
Yes.
Was that, after they sort of accounted for everyone who they would have killed, there was something like 200,000 people who were missing, which was extraordinary. They just couldn't account for those people.
Yeah.
Where did those people go? Did they all end up in Antarctica in the famous sort of Antarctica base that, you know, Hitler was apparently building and was building way before World War II even started? So the abduction of people, sometimes willing, mostly not, is unfortunately still going on today.
Absolutely. I think the Germans dubbed it the Neue Schwabenland or something like that. And do you think it's true, that story? Do you think it's valid?
Yes, only because Hitler went to such a great deal of trouble to sort of grab that territory even before the Second World War had even begun. They were flying their planes over, dropping their little flags onto. Which I think is now known as Queen Maud Land, if you look at a map of Antarctica. Britain, America really gave the impression, well, we don't care what you're doing at the moment. And so they knew German planes were dropping their little flags over Antarctica, but they just sort of didn't care what they were doing. They were too busy with other things. And as World War II unfolded, they sort of thought, oh, hang on. weren't they dropping flags over Antarctica? Now it's all starting to make sense. So, of course, the Americans went berserk and started to sort of, steam towards Antarctica. And one of the great hidden aspects of World War II is about Antarctica.
Yes.
So I definitely do believe that something was going on in Antarctica. I don't really believe that Hitler, to me, was a puppet. He was just a person to represent an idea.
Yes.
I'm quite certain they looked after him until he died, but I don't think he mattered, and I think he was just there to make sure something was going on in Antarctica. And I think that they had a real fascination for the Hollow Earth entrance, which is in the South Pole somewhere, but very well hidden.
Do you think, the Nazis had their kind of hunt for the ancient gods, the Aryans or what have you. Do you think that this could be that ancient race that you mentioned before?
It's hard to say. With the Aryan race, what I also came across with studying Hitler was his fascination for going to Tibet, and he was after sort of something called occultum or white gold, to sort of raise his levels of consciousness. But if you look at sort of the autobiography of Hitler, which I can't quite remember the title now, sorry, he was basically inferring that he was like a puppet, and he was being controlled, and he greatly feared what he called the new man, who was going to be the future, he said, and he was terrified of him. Hitler was terrified of this new man. So there's a great deal of sort of emphasis put on the Aryan race, but I think the Aryan race were really just a type of genetic form of humans that we have today. We call them Aryans, blue-eyed, blonde, but the history of the Aryan race depends on who you believe. Some people say that the Aryans came from Mars and were persecuted on Mars and came to Earth and were persecuted by the reptilians. And so they came to Earth to escape the reptilians, but the reptilians just came here. So it's so complex. It's not just about Earth. It's about, it's about the moon. It's about Mars. Venus is involved as well. It's sometimes you can sort of feel like you're focusing in too deep on one thing, and when you draw out, you can see, oh God, this is so complex.
I know. So, well, it's true. It is connected with everything else, and as you say, the mythology of this goes way back into history. And I think that actually, be it true or not, it depends again what you said about your viewpoint and all that. But I do believe that the Nazis did discover something, because again, this incessant drive they had with their different excursions. They were going to Tibet, finding certain information there, and this is all kind of a little bit based as well on, I think, some of the work that Edward Baldur Lytton did. He wrote a book called The Coming Race, for instance, which again talked about this underground world, pretty much. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes. That was, he is a strange guy. When you look into who he was, it turns out he was a Mason, I believe. And I came across a very weird piece of information one day, and I was never able to verify it again. So I couldn't actually write about it. But apparently his book was later apparently released as under the title of The Race That Will Exterminate Us. Yeah. And how prophetic. And when I tried to track this down, I couldn't, and so I couldn't really verify that. But, what he wrote about so long ago, that was sort of portrayed as just a bit of science fiction or a bit of a story. But really, when you look at it from today's point of view and you look back at all these texts, even one called, have you ever heard of Etta Dorfer?
No, I have not. Tell us about it.
Etta Dorfer was the story of a man back when based in America. It was about an inhabited underground city beneath Kentucky, the state of Kentucky.
Hmm.
And basically, a man came, he was sort of doing a bit of cave exploring, and he came across a strange man. He said, "Let me take you to the Hollow Earth." I'm telling you very quickly because it's a very, very long story and it goes on and on and on.
Yes.
But basically, he talks about, it's so fascinating because it talks about how his physiology began to change as he went down and down and down and down through all these tunnels in the earth, and how his breathing slowed down, how his heart rate slowed down, how he began to hallucinate and see things, and basically he became weightless. And for a book that was written about 150 years ago, I mean, mm. back in the 19th century,
mm.
where there was no real form of mass communication, no electricity, for this story to come out, it's just extraordinary. It's just so detailed, but it's not scientific, but it looks at all these things about how he didn't need to sweat, or it's just an extraordinary book. But it's one of those it's one of those books that's part of the folklore of the Hollow Earth.
Yes.
To keep, and it sort of keeps that belief alive that there is definitely something. There is something there about the Hollow Earth, and it needs to be put to sleep, or put to bed once and for all. To discover the Hollow Earth would be just an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there is elaborate stories about, for instance, the inner sun, that the Earth actually has a sun internally, which means that it's, you know, we have it's a climate, so to speak, of its own inside the planet. And again, it depends on how deep into the different layers you go, because again, it's, I mean, there's massive amounts of mass basically inside the Earth, and if you have if any of that is hollowed out pretty much, or if you have certain areas within the Earth that is habitable, you have awful lot of space there. That's what I'm getting to, meaning that we haven't even surveyed by foot, at least, all the things that is on the surface yet, and we think we know everything about which is underground. Same thing applies to the ocean, for instance. What I want to have said there is that we don't know, and we should realize that we don't know what's going on the inside. But regarding the inner sun, do you subscribe to that theory? Do you think that that's true?
Yes. I came across a book by an author called Jan Lemprecht, which I think that's how you pronounce it, called The Hollow Earth. And because you were talking about the sort of size of the Hollow Earth there, he sort of looked into it scientifically and sort of brought the crust in so it was much, much thicker. Because originally the estimate of the thickness of the Hollow Earth, which I think came out in either Phantom of the Poles, which was a book which came out in the early 20th century, or there was also Journey to the Earth's Interior by Marshall Gardner. Those two books were fairly famous at looking at sort of the thickness of the crust, which they said was about 800 miles thick. But Jan Lemprecht said that no, it's going to be much thicker than that, and the openings have got to be smaller just for scientific purposes. But he said that the idea of a sun is definitely possible, because you've got to look at the aurora. Where is the aurora coming from?
Yes.
Whether the aurora borealis or the aurora australis. What are these amazing things? Something's got to be shining out of these openings. So there's sort of indications of an inner sun rather than anyone actually have ever seen one. I think the aurora is an amazing, which you must be able to have more ability to perhaps see indications of than I would. We don't really see it here in Australia; it's too far away. But sort of the Northern Lights as we sort of know them.
Yes.
It's just an amazing indication that there must be either an inner sun or there is some enormous, amazing light source. And, you know, the recent tests that NASA have done, they've sent secretly, or mostly secretly, they've sent their little satellites up over the North Pole and the South Pole, and they found that the auroras are identical. They're not sort of flowing out separate light shows. They're absolutely identical, which to me says, well, there's got to be something inside that it's like light. It's sending out the light from both the North and South Pole openings.
Mm-hmm.
And this here is an indication that there could be an inner sun. So I'm looking at the indications of an inner sun. Is it a sun like our sun? I'm not quite sure, but there's got to be something there that could be providing light, a light source that could certainly be accounting for easily, you know, people to live there, for vegetables to grow,
yes.
All these sorts of things that provide for life.
Very, very interesting. Kathleen, I do want to hear in a little while continue with you in talking more or going more into specifics about human cloning, experimentation overall, human hybrids and some of the different races that you mentioned, and go a little bit more into detail about that here in hour two for our members. But before you do that, just a few more points to kind of round things off here for the first hour. I've heard that there is a no-flight zone over the poles, which means that you're actually not allowed to fly over there yourself to actually see if it is indeed openings or something like that. Do you know if this is true or not?
There is a bit of a mystery surrounding that, but then there is an airline, which I'm really sorry, I can't quite recall which airline it is, and they used to maintain, no, that's not true, because we fly over the poles.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually looked at their flight path, they didn't. They flew slightly around, which sort of made you think, well, why would they maintain that they were flying directly over the pole? I mean, many people might say, well, it's to do with radar and all that sort of thing, not being able to tell this or that or where they're going. But I think that's quite interesting. Why aren't they flying direct over the pole? Why aren't they treating it as just a piece of land to fly over, or an ocean,
yeah,
just fly over? But, you know, all indications are that they are not doing that. And to me that says, well, there's definitely, no, they're not flying over the poles. Is there a quasi-law that says that you can't? I think there is. But I think the best person to sort of confirm that with would be a pilot.
Yes.
Who actually flies in those zones. And if you could get them to come on the record, which they probably won't, then that would be the best person to say, oh, yes, or, oh, no, we don't. And then say, well, why?
Yes.
But I, obviously, no, they don't. They don't fly over the pole.
That is interesting then. And if we talk about the potential climate changes that is going on, the potential kind of shifting of glaciers, their build-up in some areas, meltdown in others, people are speculating that on Antarctica, for instance, actually could reveal more of itself under the ice if this climate change actually is happening, and if that is going to progress and continue. Do you think that could potentially reveal something in regards to the information that we've been talking about so far, underground bases, tunnels or cities or something like that? What do you think?
It's possible that could happen, but you have to come back to the idea of, well, how are we going to find out that information? It's a bit like a journalist who's embedded with the military going into Iraq or Afghanistan. They're really only going to show you what they want to show you, and you have to report in a favourable way of what they're doing, otherwise you're sort of kicked off the bandwagon. But places like Antarctica, they're so remote and so isolated, to fly there costs a fortune. It's not as if there's a heavy tourist contingent going there every day. You've only got scientists going there, and scientists are really restricted in what they're going to be able to say, and many of them may have a very closed mindset anyway. So
yes.
Antarctica may reveal a great deal, but you're going to have sort of amateur scientists, like you have the ones who are looking at Mars and with their telescopes and saying, look, here's a picture of Mars with green vegetation, with a blue sky, and to put those up on the web so that you've got someone who's independent, able to do that with Antarctica. Unless you've got someone to do that, then it's really going to be difficult to find out what's going on in Antarctica.
Yes. And folks, you're not going to see it on Google Earth either. I mean, I reckon that they will blur that out if it's true that
exactly.
There's an opening there. So.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. It's definitely going to be censored, and the media is just not going to, especially Google, is just not going to work in our favor. They're not going to say, oh, look, we feel so sorry for you. Here's the opening to the Earth, the hollow Earth. Or, here it is. It's these coordinates. Here it is for you. They're
yes.
not going to do that for us.
No. Hey, Kathleen, let's begin here to round things up for the first hour then. And please tell us your website again, and for people who are interested in getting a copy of your book, how they would go about doing that.
Okay, you can just go to the website, which is toomanysecrets.synthesite.com, and just click on Purchase Too Many Secrets. It'll tell you how to do that and the cost for your country for the postage, and it'll take you through how to do that.
Excellent.
And it does get posted from Australia, so, and I will sign every book that I send out.
Wonderful. So again, check out the website for much more information and more information about the book. It's toomanysecrets.synthesite.com. We will have this linked up again, of course, on redicecreations.com, so you can click through from there easily. And we have much more to talk about here in the next segment, so stay with us and we'll continue after this break. That's hour one with Kathleen Mackerlane, and we are getting ready for hour two. We are going to talk more about the different races, human cloning and human-alien hybrids. We discuss UFOs and the involvement of the military. We talk about implants, mind control, jump gate technology, Mars, the moon, and temporal wars, time travel. We also go into more specifics about the reptilian race. We talk about soul and energy harvesting, and what the human race is going through right now. What is the depopulation plans about? Are we part of a big genetic experiment? We talk about a few of the ways they try to cull our numbers with things like the swine flu and especially the vaccinations. We talk about the mass awakening, surveillance, Big Brother system of control, and towards the end, we discuss the misconceptions about Shambhala and Agartha. But we'll begin to talk more about the new man and what that concept really means. So join us for hour two. Support an independent truth-seeking radio program and website. Sign up and tune in. Get instant access when you sign up through our website. It's safe, fast, and easy. You'll get full access to our radio archive going back to 2006, and there's lots of good stuff waiting there for you. We also have films. Architects of Control is available there now as well. We have webcasts, video interviews, and much more good stuff is on the way for you. RedIceCreations.com is the address. You'll find all the information about our program, how to subscribe, our upcoming guests, and much more there. But we'll be back with hour two after some music.
What you get, you'll make your time like it. You choose your leaders and wait. Oh!